Hughes, Mohammed, and Leslie Clark, so it'll be easy. I'm in the Q&A session. I'm going to extend a lot on what that talk was about and kind of dig into one phenomenon that we've seen. So I'm going to go into this phenomenon called looter services. And probably a lot of community isn't exactly sure what a looter service is, so I'm going to tell you what a looter service is. And kind of in a nutshell, what they are is you can use your allowance to try and beat up people. Originally, these were used mostly by gamers, not the Shutter Rock residential leagues, but as the attacks and scripts have gotten better and better, they've scaled to the point where they can probably take down most community-sized websites. And as fortune would have it, back entities think leak all the time, but a very rich source of data from one that's called TW Looter, and that's going to be kind of the basis that I try and do my analysis. So let me just quickly give you the rundown on what a looter service is. First, they're very easy to find. You can just type into Google, you can Google looter, and then they go by this kind of thin veneer. They call themselves stress factors. It's how they try and legitimize themselves. So as you can see, you could choose from many, many looter services. There's pages and pages of these protocols on Google. And if you didn't want to use Google, you can go straight to the source, hack forums, and you'll see them. There's an entire subsection of hack forums devoted to these looter services, and they tell you their different features. A lot of them key on uptime, they'll say 99% uptime, 100% uptime. They key on things like this, they compete on customer service, they compete on how many attacks, how much capacity they have to offer. Some of these are claiming, right, 65 gigabits a second that they can sustain on these things. So we'll miss some pretty decent DDoS machines at this point. And if you see one of these that you like, you can just go to their website. Here's one of them here, and they just offer their features, so they're getting more and more features these days. They have this one called Skype. What this is there's a privacy hole in Skype where you can find anyone's IP address. If they're logged into Skype, and you have their username. So they integrate this into the service, so you can, instead of using an IP address, domain name, you just use the Skype ID. And it'll automatically refresh every 5 seconds to follow them around in case they try and hide from you. That's an IP address. There's another one for Steam. This is a gaming platform. Again, it needs your IP information. So they've integrated this in so that you just have some Steam ID. And you can DOS based on that. There's another one for Cloudflare, where it tries to burn through Cloudflare and find the actual IP address of the service so that they can just bypass us or all the other and attack the service directly. So they're integrating more and more services like this. They say, right, normally how these services are sold is that they allow you to perform some kind of limited DDoS. In this case, it's 1 hour is their maximum limit. So take a guess, how much would you pay for a service like this?
$5.
What?
$5?
$5? Hey, you're in the ballpark here. You're more in the ballpark than most. So here's kind of what they normally price these services at. Is here, right? You have, for a month, you can get about $20 to get you an hour of DDoS. If you want to do two concurrent attacks on this service, $20. They have this lifetime membership. Take that with your install. All the services that offer a lifetime membership just kind of normally go under at some point. So lifetime might be anywhere from 6 months to a year that they might survive before they have to make up. They need to close business and reopen underneath. They all always reopen underneath.
What's the policy? I mean, you can do an hour for a six-month plan. Often can you?
It's pretty much buffet style. So as long as you're willing to reopen the attack every hour, you can continue to use their service. There's no limit. Right? They have one concurrent attack, two concurrent attacks. And as long as you're willing to reopen it for an hour, it might be like by ride where unlimited might not really mean unlimited.
Is that like 1 hour per day for an entire month?
No, this is 1 hour and you can re-up it after that hour. You can initiate a new attack.
Oh, I see.
So, yeah. You get a lot of bang for your buck. So, if you decide on what it is you want to shut your money, then you get this kind of nice, easy-to-use interface. You can just plug in the Skype ID the host name. You can drop down and you use some layer 4 attacks. Probably most people don't understand how layer 4 that are using this thing. But they sort them by that and you get some layer 7 attacks. Some of them are more user-friendly. They say, like, if you want to get around Cloudflare, you know, use your HTTP get and post attacks. If you're doing a non-Cloudflare service, you probably best with like one of your UDP style attacks. So some of them even handhold their users even more. So these are the kinds of nice user interfaces that you'll get out of these tools. And so how does it kind of look from the booter services? What does it take to start up these booter services? Is an interesting question. So the first thing you're probably going to need, you're going to need those nice little scripts, right? Off the internet. So you might have to pay some of your code up some script creation. But the nice thing is that these days there's a lot of source code floating around on the internet. So Asylum Booter was kind of one of the original kind of large scale full featured booters, and their source code is just floating around the web. So in fact, this source code is the basis for a lot of the other booters' source code. Okay, so you easily solve this web code problem. Next thing you have to do is you have to grab some attack instructor, right? You actually need to build some attack instructor. You can either go the route of, you know, reproducing some bots, maybe paying for some bot install, or if that's just too much of a hassle, you know, bots are like, they go up and down the hassle. You can just rent some infrastructure. And so it's kind of a mix to find between booter services, whether they use compromised things to do their attacks, or whether they rent services. Compromised teams are going to tolerate these kinds of bad behavior. So the next point is you need some way to collect money. Most of these services accept PayPal payments. Some of them are beginning to accept Bitcoin payments. And before Liberty Reserve was taken down, Liberty Reserve was their choice for these things, but obviously that's no longer an option for them. So now that you can collect some money, so next you need to attract some customers. So you can advertise on things like Hack Forum, like I showed you the entire forum that's dedicated to these things. You can also go to gamer sites and say, hey, I'm opening up a booter service. Please join it. And then the final step in this, of course, is you contact them. So that's kind of the introduction to these booter services. The next part of the study is going to be based on this leak data set from this one booter service. So this leak happened in late March, I believe it was. It was from the TW Booter 2. It had the nickname 2 in it because it had relaunched at some point, but the domain name was taken away. And then it relaunched as TW Booter 2. And at the time that they were taken down, they were in operation for about 2 months, I would say. And they had already attracted about 300 users to their service. They had racked up over 10,000 victims, unique victims. And their users had carried out almost 50,000 attacks at this point. And this was a very nice, fine-grained data source.
If a user does an hour and then re-ups, is that one attack period?
That's kind of stupid. That's why you see the large number of attacks. So we're going to break down what that number actually means in a little bit. Because the nice thing is, this data set is very rich. You see a lot of these weak data sets from these booter services, but most of them aren't that rich. So this one had a nice properties to it. It contained the IP and domain name for a target, it contained the type, it contained the duration, and it contained the client that initiated it. Most booter services, it turns out, don't keep as good records as booter services. So this was a nice boost to us in our research. And it, in fact, provides a lot of nice insights into their infrastructure, how their clients behave, and who their victims are, and how they're victims. So, kind of how this data set came into being is that TW Booter 2 was used to DDoS a blogger named Brian Krebs. I would warn you not to mess with Brian Krebs because in the end you're probably going to pay dearly for it. So in this case, he exposed this booter service, he exposed this leaked data set from them, and he also hunted down the particular client that was responsible for DDoSing site. So this client went by the name of Phobia. A little bit of background. Brian Krebs traced him down to a teenager that was still living with his parents. I believe he was like 19 or so. And he was part of this kind of, I would call it Brian, if I would manage to hunt this person down and expose the inner workings of the food service.
Was this the same deal that had the gun swatted?
Yes, I believe he was also probably responsible for that. So, yes, you don't mess with Brian or else you're going to have your details posted on here. And this website was also tied to some attacks against some other reporters from RS Techno. And we're also going to go to some other somewhat high-profile attacks of the food service. So I did a little bit of digging into this food service, and there's two people mostly behind this particular food service. One of them goes by the name of Aska. He's the one that fronts the money for the service. And then there's this other guy, the lead, that's the developer of this service. And as I said, they have this nice little friendly message where they relaunched this thing. And both of them are definitely not US leads. So this service is supposed to be kind of one of the cutting edge services. It integrated the Skype Cloud thing. It has, it tried to integrate more than advanced DDoS services into their platform. Okay, so let's do a quick rundown of what we found when we dug into this database. The first thing that we found is their attack infrastructure. In total, they had 15 servers. When they started their service, they had 3 servers. By the end of this thing, there were 9 active servers. All the active servers were hosted at an ISP in the Netherlands. There were, at one time, 3 US-based servers. However, these looked like they were short-lived. They, I think, lasted between 3 and 6. So probably take down on these servers. However, the Netherlands ones were fairly stable back to use them on all of them. Some things that we noticed in this attacking structure, it offers some pretty clever SIM flooding. It offers the DNS amplification attacks that we were just talking about. Those are implemented in this code. It offers some clever HTTP-based ones that look very much like a router. Enough like a router to get around things like Cloudflare and things like that. And they had another one, Ruby, but essentially these top ones may have got, I think, 95% of the attack types that people chose for these. The next thing that we can look at is we actually subscribed to this service to try and figure out what the capabilities were. They telling the truth about how much attack traffic they were. And so here's what we found when we subscribed to the service. First, we did the SIM flooding. That's not really meant to run your bandwidth. It's more meant to just... At this point, I think the most devastating attack on a SIM flood is actually the network interrupts that generates off your network card. If you don't have a smart enough network card to deal with this on board, it's probably the most devastating attack for SIM flood today. And the interesting one was the DNS amplified UDP attack. So that one, it picked up about the same number of packets, obviously much, much larger packets being amplified. And that one actually picked up over 800 megabits a second of the traffic.
So are those self-reported numbers, or did you attack something?
Well, we attacked our own server.
What does that mean? Do you guys use that obviously?
We warned them beforehand, so they knew it was coming. We have a kind of swampy part of the GMU network that is kind of set up. So we attacked the swamp. And the other thing is we tried the layer 7 HTTP attack. And it was somewhat interesting. We found they were actually using proxies. So for the SIM one, they were obviously just spoofing their attacks, the IP network. So having to spoof whatever they wanted in the IP address. DNS one, obviously, hide behind the reflection part. You want to need to actually establish a connection. So for this one, they need some proxies. We attacked ourselves for 5 minutes. We saw over 26,000 proxies that they had access to. These didn't look like uniform proxies. They kind of looked like a Frankenstein kind of proxy network. And in fact, some of these proxies forwarded the original headers so that we could see the servers in the Netherlands that were actually attacking. So this looked kind of like a pod-to-pod of those proxies. I don't know exactly how they built this. It probably wasn't a bot network. It's probably just like, you know, them scraping open the proxy list, would be my guess. Because none of the proxies really look uniform in any way. So this this shows you that, in fact, they're telling the truth. They can, in fact, pick up a pretty sizable amount of network traffic with these DNS amplification effects. So the next thing we wanted to look at was kind of the growth rate of these services to see, right, how many customers are they there. So at the beginning, there's this large spreading growth. It might be because they existed in the service before, so these might be users of the old service, just transferring over to their new service. And then once that levels off, you see about 3 users are adding pretty consistently per day onto the growth. And most of the people from month to month resubscribe. So they kept their customers happy. Next we try to dig into what these users exactly look like. And we definitely found that there were typically 3 categories of users. There were the gamer users, these were the ones who just subscribed for the very short attacks. When you do these things, there's tiered prices, so you can subscribe, as I showed you. So in the case of TW Booter, it was between, I think, 1 minute and 2 hours where your subscription comes. So normally the gamers opted for 10 minutes or less of continuous DDoS time. The people that were more interested in attacking websites obviously went for the longer time period. And we found these privileged users that appeared to have unlimited ability on the system. These weren't the developers, they might have been the buddies of the developers, we're not sure who these people were, but they could execute far more attacks than the normal user. And we tried to compute the earnings of the service and found that TW0 was finding about, probably about 7,000, somewhere around there, assuming that most of the people have to pay for the service in subscriptions a month. So if you're supporting about 9 servers, this is probably a sustainable business. And TW Booter doesn't offer lifetime service. They were actually trying to go for a sustainable business model. So we dug into a little bit more in these 3 categories of users, and this is where we find that, right, even though it's 50,000 attacks, a lot of these attacks, the majority of their attackers are gamers, and they're launched on attacks, but they're really short attacks. And they're mostly launched at residential networks. The other thing is we pick out the website users. The interesting thing is that if you look across all 3 of these, they kind of, right, they have the same number of targets a day. They kind of launch the same number of attacks. It's just the duration of those attacks that seems to change based on the class of users. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe that's the attention span that people have, is that they can click on the button 13 times a day and then they're bored. So that's what we found, and then clearly, privileged users were causing a lot of havoc with the service. They could have started attacks, and they continue to run until they stop them. So these privileged users, by far, kicked up a lot of traffic. And in fact, we found 6 users were responsible for about half of the attack hours of the service. I think 2 of these users were privileged users, and 4 of these users just like clicking on the button a lot and attacking people's websites. Next, we kind of dug into the victim side of things. So we dug into it, we found out about 10,000 of them looked like they were unique victims of the service. We identified about 700 websites. We did this right just by looking through the IP address and trying to connect to 480. And these were the ones that answered. In fact, right, most of them were residential links. However, there were a decent number of websites. We kind of inspected a lot of websites, and a lot of websites, it was still overlapped with gamer sites. So it was like gaming servers, gaming forums, and then we also found, kind of ironically, other Booter services was their next popular service. So it kind of ran down there. And then from there, there was kind of this long tail of things. You could pick out some of the bloggers and blogging sites that they attacked. We didn't pick out 3 government sites, we picked out 2 users. We actually suspected that this was 1 user that subscribes for 2 subscriptions because of the limits placed on him. This user attacked 3 government sites for a total of a few days. 2 of them were Indian government sites, and the 3rd one was the LA Police Department's website. So I guess he had a phone to pick with the Indian government and the LAPD or something. So, right, this isn't the only Booter service that I show you. This isn't the only Booter service they have their data leaked. happened that this food service kept a lot better rather than most of the other food services. So we picked on it. We also had some leaked dumps from the asylum food service, which is much older, much more established in this market. They didn't keep fine grade records of their cash flow. So all that we can really glean from it is that they had over 5,000 subscribers. They launched over 500,000 packs over 16 months. And like I said, if you search PageSpin, you can find more and more of these things. Some of them showed evidence of using compromised servers as a backend. Some of them looked like they rented servers. Most of them, you know, maybe the large ones had like 100 or 200 users. And it looks like there's kind of a vigilante group that sprung up that like hacking into these Twitter services and kind of disabling their Twitter services. So one of the popular ones is Twitter Down that kind of picks on these guys. Then it's probably a large source of the leaked data sets. Anything like that. They're kind of trying to police the market and not have much of that coming. So kind of the takeaway from this is, right, is that these booter services with your allowance money, you can rent this fairly powerful infrastructure. You can make heavy use of it. This infrastructure is very capable of taking down medium-sized websites. They're actively developing these scripts. They're refining how good these attacks work. They're integrating all these other services to help you use them easier, hunt people down, turn them to their protection as much as possible. Integrated services. Then there are also more large use of the DNS amplification. This is definitely kind of the killer DDoS what you see of things. And like I said, this service, you know, it's not making a whole lot of money, but it looks like they can probably sustain themselves as well. So that's kind of the wrap-up on these services. So, questions? I should probably thank Brian for leaking the data set onto the internet and Muhammad for doing all of the grungy work with the MySQL.
So you showed for the application of that, you showed that has a 90%
Yeah, about that, yeah.
How much did they add to that? So I'm just trying to figure out if it wants to advertise or
not. I think that's actually about what they advertise.
Okay.
If you go to the three concurrent model, then you could bomb these three together, and you could get about three advertiser rates. They were advertising about three gig business items. So.
Do you think the ones who advertise much higher? Like, I think you should apply them.
Right, like 65 gigabits.
Do you think they
judging by the feedback, some of these can't. In fact, kick it that much. If you look at that forum, they have, you know, hundreds of replies to it. So obviously, there's some much larger scale booter services out there. NCW Booter wasn't even on that list. They didn't pay for advertising on that forum, so probably only the bigger ones pay for that.
So I wonder what this lower margin is. You see as much innovation. I know that there's costs in the course of it, but student customizing, how much of that they do? How much of a sense do you get from watching that?
There are a lot of people just following on the coattails of other people and right what's new now that commoditized to the lower end of things. So that's what's happening is people on the higher end are innovating and pushing the boundaries, and then they're just mirroring that slowly, bringing that over to sort of. And some of it's effectively like open source. When the source code just leaked out all the time. So there's a lot of just people copying an original code base, making it a little bit better and kind of iterating that.
So what is the most common payment method?
Or it appears that PayPal is probably the relatively common payment method. That's the default you go to most of the sites. Is the default PayPal, and then you can drop down and Bitcoin. Probably the only other one in web money might be the other one.
And they also advertised sexy tech support or customer support. Were you able to verify that? Would that be the thing?
No, in fact, they do offer customer support. Some of them have phone numbers. I call the government. You can get customer support. Because they offer free subscriptions and free subscription. They don't offer the layer 7 attack.
Just because you're a business person, you just because you're a business doesn't mean your customers don't. I mean, you don't know.
This is true on the other side, right? The ones that offer the lifetime support, they go out of business at some point.
So I'm wondering, I mean, they're hosting the services, right? You know, a lot of this traffic is transit, not the application tax process. But a lot of that traffic is sourced in these, as you said, seven boxes and one ISP someplace. So I wonder why, is this why they're cycling so quickly? Is it because they're getting taken down?
It's like I said, some of these were used for the entire, so there were three of these that were used for the entire 9 months. And the other six that they added on, another one stayed up for a month. So I don't think that that's their problem. It seems like they can find ISPs that are friends with this hosting DDoS. And other people have reported on these same findings that you can pierce through their proxies. So other people have pierced through these proxies and posted the name of this Netherlands ISP. So this is, I guess, another issue.
Any other questions? All right, let's go ahead and make the speaker.